Howdy and welcome to River Talk, a podcast hosted by Priscilla Macy, Zach Collier, and me, Eric Weiseth. This week, our big topic is summer 2020. Do we get to have one? COVID-19, rivers closed, you know, all the things. So before we get to that exciting news and the guests that we have that are going to help educate us on all of that, Zach, do you have any news of the week other than Priscilla's not here? Because Priscilla's doing Priscilla stuff.
She's off doing Priscilla stuff. I don't have any news of the week, but I do want to announce that we now have a sponsor of the show for this episode. And if it's a good advertisement, maybe future episodes. And those are our friends over at Sotar Inflatables, who make rafts here in the U.S. And Eric and I both have paddled their rafts tons of times. And we just want to thank them for supporting this episode and mention they have their big spring sale coming up. Usually their spring sale is this massive sale they have, and everybody comes to the shop and they buy things. This year it's more of a virtual sale, so you can go on their website and buy things, get 15% off on pretty much everything. And on our website we have all the codes you need to type in if you buy it online. But I'm sure if you call them, they'll give you the deals too. And you can they'll ship stuff, they'll ship boats, or you can pick up your boat in a very COVID-friendly way that was explained to me, but I didn't quite understand. So just want to give a shout out to our friends at Sotar. Thanks for supporting the show.
Yeah, the Sotar SLs are probably the best looking boat ever made. So, you know, if you want to look good on the river, go buy yourself an SL.
And they have the ones, I think that those are the diminishing tube boats, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they are sexy. I'm not a fan of diminishing tube boats personally, but whatever. That's a different debate. But they do their Eco Challenge boats that they use for some Fiji Eco Challenge are massively discounted. And so it's a great way to get a great boat at a good price.
Yep.
So
go Sotar.
Yep.
And if you're out there and you're, you know, a company that does river stuff and you're looking to, you know, ways to spend your advertising dollars, we're here.
Yeah.
You get high quality ads like this one.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I rehearsed this one for hours, so hopefully I pull it off.
So this week, since we're just going to skip past news of the week, because I think that's mostly what we're going to talk about anyway, we have two guests. Aaron Bannon, who, correct me if I'm wrong on your title, is the executive director of the America Outdoors Association.
That's
and
right.
And Aaron Lieberman, the other Aaron, or Aaron number one or two, whatever we want to do. Aaron Lieberman is the executive director of the Idaho Outfitter and Guides Association. So they're here to talk about summer 2020 and the river industry. Both these organizations are advocacy organizations for outfitting in their respective areas that they cover. But yeah, here to talk about kind of outfitting and boating in summer of 2020. So what's your guys's kind of feeling today? Are we going to have a river season?
Oh, that's a huge question.
I don't want to answer,
start out with the easy ones, Eric.
Yeah, exactly.
What are we, Nostradamus?
Yeah. Hey, Aaron number two, I'm going to give you the softball to start.
Yeah, right. I think it's going to look different in different places. I think, you know, as we're seeing with states, with forests, even like all following a little bit different protocol, that there's going to be, you know, different ways that things are going to roll out. I think people should be prepared for a lot of different scenarios. I think people should be prepared for, you know, the potential that it comes roaring back because people are so tired of being cooped up in their homes. And I think people should be prepared for this to be a real slow walk back because people are timid. Or if it does come back, we have to think about a whole new way to adhere to the standards that the country has implemented so that we can even operate, you know. So we as an industry have a lot to figure out, I think, to be able to answer that question that if it does, are we prepared to roll with it? So,
and as we at America Outdoors are sort of like grappling with that, it's we're starting to move into that phase of, you know, what do guidelines look like? What kind of guidance can we use? We had a lot of people had set that up sort of at the front end. I think things are just going to be looking a lot different. You know, people, when we still had that hope, right, in like the first or second week of March that some level of operation could continue, that we might be able to manage through this, and that quickly dissipated, that stuff is going to look outdated. So yeah, I think it's on the industry to be adaptable, sort of high contact, really responsible and demonstrating that responsibility and all that. Like, I think there's hope. I think there's hope that something can come of this season. But it's going to be devastating for a lot of people no matter what. And there are certainly places that have agencies that have already closed down for the summer. So they're sort of out of the picture already. Right, Aaron, number one?
Yep. I appreciate that, by the way.
I can't believe you're letting him be Aaron number one.
Listen, he gets to lower things. Aaron number two gets to lower things over me all the time. And this is like my one win.
I'm the executive director of a national association.
Yeah. And I mean, technically they're just kind of like a work group within IOGA.
Oh, come on, Aaron.
I'm kidding. You know, I shouldn't say those things.
You said that publicly.
Aaron Bannon, Aaron number two is a great guy. He's doing great things for the industry. And I just give him a hard time. You should hear the way he talks about IOGA when we're not being recorded.
I'll tell you what, like, I have appreciated our collaboration, and like Aaron Lieberman has been one of the guys who's like reaching out early and often and trying to just like find the thing to do that can help. He's been a really passionate leader for IOGA. It's been an honor to be working with him through this.
God, you see how he took the high road there, like a champion?
He would.
Aaron number one.
Yeah. Well, I feel like an asshole now.
Aaron number one, before you go, I'm going to just say something. For those of you that don't know what AO and America or an IOGA are, I just want to take a second. America Outdoors is our national outfitting group, and it advocates for outfitting. It also does a lot of advocating for boaters in general. So, you know, Eric and I are outfitters. We belong to these organizations, and we work with them to help, handle problems on a national level that apply to outfitters. But we also do a lot to open up rivers and work on things that affect private boaters. IOGA, which Air number one is the executive director of, is the Idaho Outfitter and Guides Association, which represents outfitters in Idaho, both river and land outfitters. So hunting, fishing, rafting, the whole thing. Just want to, so everybody knows, we're throwing a lot of terminology around. Wanted to clear that up.
Thank you.
Yeah. This is Aaron number one, I guess, on that pretty big leading or starting question. You know, I'd say to Aaron number two's point or statement, we don't know. We don't know what it's going to look like. That's just fundamentally true. Possibility is a really big continent, and we're not quite there yet. Having said that, I think also it will vary. Like, both these are evasive statements, right? Like, it will also vary by where you are. And what I mean to ground that, like, and Aaron can speak to this probably more, but in other states, so outside of Idaho, there are, in particular, outfitters and folks wanting to otherwise recreate on national parks or in national parks. That's a totally different story, at least as it currently stands. I'd say for Idaho in particular, I'm certainly hopeful that we'll be able to have a season. I think that what that season looks like in terms of any potential limitations imposed by the state and or federal or state agencies is yet to be seen. It's been changing, honestly, almost on a daily basis. But I think, the hope is that there will be. I think that there's some question. And I mean, this is a podcast for not just outfitters and guides, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we're talking to all of our boater friends. And so I'd say to the rest of our boater friends that, we're in a really similar position where, whether or not outfitters and guides get some, permission or not, it's generally going to come down. And so, like, to ground this, say, on the Middle Fork or the Main, the Payette, like, whatever river section we're talking about, it's really going to come down more than anything to A, what is happening nationally with COVID, and then B, what as a result of that is happening with guidelines and or regulations, restrictions imposed by or suggested by the CDC or the administration that come down through states and that other or through management authorities and end up impacting whether or not we can go. So for example, on the Middle Fork and the Maine Salmon, which are within the Salmon Chalice National Forest, as well as a shared authority to some degree with Nez Clear, there's currently a closure until April 30th in accordance with the Idaho Governor Little's order. And that's affecting both private and commercial boaters. In fact, there weren't really commercial launches too early on, but there were a number of private launches canceled. And that was due to the fact that the Forest Service didn't really have any way to ensure that those private launches were going to be able to abide by the guidelines that they were passed down from their DC office. So will there be a season? I sure should hope so. Gonna work to make sure that there is one if it's safe.
You know what, you're talking about that, Aaron, you got me thinking what everybody's role is in that. And you have agencies that they're all overwhelmed, and they're, you know, regardless of the site, like they're all trying to figure out what to do. The more leadership that like the community can take to them or engage with them, and I think the better off we'll be. And there's going to be, I think on the part of a lot of parties who have, if you're an outfitter, you've lost a launch. If you're lucky enough to, hit a lottery on the Maine Salmon, like you might lose your pass for that too, to be able to recover that. Right. And so, as things relax, as seasons start to open up, if there's going to be any flexibility in letting people, have a launch or two more a day, in letting people have a bigger group, it's going to be totally dependent on how folks on the ground level are interacting with that site, that forest, or that park. And it's going to depend on how effective they are in presenting sort of a unified plan that the agency can get behind without having to do too much work. Seeing that happen already on the Grand Canyon.
Are you saying like private group associations and outfitter group associations working together with the agencies to come up with a good plan?
Exactly. Yeah. Because the tension is going to be between your outfit, right, who's trying to maybe get a couple more permits, and the pressure that puts on the private voters and the experiences they want to have. So if the agencies feel that concern is well assuaged because you've sort of come to a good agreement, I think you're going to have a better bet. And they're going to be afraid to make big changes, so they're going to need that kind of support.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people, private boaters, might think that outfitters are just trying to get access for themselves. And I don't think that's going to be true at all. I think that outfitters, we have associations, and we meet with the Forest Service or whatever on a somewhat basis. Private boater groups can and should as well, but even if they don't, we're looking out for all boaters. I don't think that we're going in there saying we only want commercial launches, and I don't think the Forest Service would only do commercial launches because we're meeting with them. I think that the goal here is just to open up the access to the public, which means both outfitted and non-outfitted.
Yeah. So, yeah, yep. Zach, this is our number one. I just want to emphasize that part. I think that's totally true. And honestly, like, separate from COVID and separate from everything else, a really important point to hammer home, because there is, I'll just say it. I'll throw it out there. There's a tension, we all feel it. There's a tension there. Like it's why we give the caveat when we start having conversations between private and commercial, because we're recognizing that there is something there. Mm-hmm. I just say that that's baloney. There shouldn't be a tension there, because mm-hmm. to your point, and you're dead on. To your point, you and Eric, you're outfitters, right? And what you are doing is providing opportunity to the public. But even beyond that, like, you're not, it's not like the Zach, I mean, it is the Zach show, but it's the Zach show, like, bringing members of the public in to experience the things that they wouldn't otherwise be able to experience without the Zach show. So, like, that's great. But it's also, and more grounded in this current context, and to Aaron's point, Aaron number two, when it comes down to it, we're fighting for the same thing. And so when we're talking about how can we establish guidelines, or how can we establish protocols whereby people can continue to experience these incredible places and have these opportunities, in the context of COVID. You know, it's like it whittles down to its core what we're all about fundamentally, which is experiencing rivers, running the gut, doing great stuff. Well, and, you know, not just running rivers, but other stuff, experiencing wild places, experiencing beautiful things. Like, and the public has as much a stake in that as any outfitter does, because they're serving that public. And the extent to which we don't come together around shared solutions is directly related to the extent to which we succeed or fail.
Hey, I keep hearing you guys talk about protocols for how we run trips, and I think these protocols would be equally applied to commercial and private. Can you guys talk about that, like what you're seeing, what you think might be coming down, how that interaction, what's going on with how trips might be differently managed moving forward?
You know, I take like some cues from just how other countries are starting to come through this, and like the Wuhan province of China is a great place to look, since they've had this the longest, right? So if the authorities are to be believed, they had their first case in December or something, you know, cleaned it all up about 30 days. But if you like really look at what's happening, you know, here we are in mid-March, it's possible they had it since November. That's like 6 months. And as they're coming back, they're practicing social distancing, and they're having to wear face masks, right? They have to do all these things. So like, there's a little bit of that, like, you know, the CDC policy has evolved to a point where it feels pretty set. So like, we're not going to be able to do like, even though the lockdown will sort of go away, we're not going to move straight back into big groups. So we're still going to have small groups. We're still going to practice social distancing. We're probably going to have to wear masks if we want to adhere to CDC guidelines. And that is like just a big question that I'm asking myself is like, how do you do that on a river trip? How do you wear a mask, not have it be a hazard on a river trip? Is there the right kind of mask? So I don't know. I don't have the answer to that, but I think those are some of the things we have to start thinking about.
Well, those are all contingency. That's all part of contingency planning, right? And the good news is that river runners are better than anybody, and like people in these outdoor areas are better than anybody at contingency planning. Like, what happens if I go there and I don't want to, you know? Like, what happens if I do have, what happens if there is some restriction by the Forest Service or otherwise for, you know, a 3 to 6 foot social distance? Like, how does that work? What does it look like if I have to tell my people that they have to wear masks in a rapid? You know, like, I think those are all like, so, you know, at least on mine, when I think about those guidelines or potential protocols, it's planning for the multitude of variable contingencies that may be true or may be the case at any point in the future, so that those are in place, whether for commercial or private trips, so that you can still go out, have that experience within those guidelines, and otherwise, you know, you'd hope safely or safely as you can while abiding by them. So it's contingency planning.
So on, you know, you guys are probably a little more on the ground on this and getting a sense of where agencies are thinking or where their heads are today. And granted, I mean, we can all appreciate that, you know, the world is changing 100% every like 12 hours. But let's say, you know, you're Bob and you got a Middle Fork permit for this summer after 15 years of trying, and you're starting to think about your trip. You know, are there any suggestions that you guys would have about, you know, here's the things I would start thinking about now, because I anticipate that there's probably, you know, there could be a reality where this is forced on you later. You know, is it, instead of inviting 20 people, which is what your permit's for, should you maybe only invite 10? Should you think about your shuttles differently? Should you, like, are there any things that you guys would give people advice or recommendations to start thinking about now for their summer activities?
That's a huge question. Go, Aaron.
Go ahead, number two. No. So, I mean, I was going to say, we'll go from local to global, because Aaron's going to be able to speak to a lot. Aaron number two is going to be able to speak to a lot more management authorities than I can. But I'd say, like, in Idaho and with the Forest Service, to just as a starting point, they are talking about and or rolling out opportunities for those who pull the permit in the lottery, like Forest Lottery at the very least, to be able to defer that trip to next year, which, you know, I like insofar as I would really encourage the general public to consider postponing and not canceling their trips with outfitters. So, you know, a little plug for that. But yeah, so I think, it's going to vary hugely. And I think Aaron number two is going to be able to give a lot more insight on hopefully on the, folks beyond the Forest Service and or BLM. And BLM has been pretty silent so far. But I know the Forest Service is already considering that, you know, whether they should reduce. I would recommend that as a rule, like, hey, if you're inviting more than 10 people on your once in a lifetime Middle Fork trip, are those actually people you genuinely deeply like? And if not, then probably don't invite them. You know, like, I think that's a good rule in general.
Yeah, good thought. It goes back to the contingency planning that you were just talking about, Aaron. You know, it's a risk management approach that people are good at taking who are experienced boaters or experienced operators in general, right? You have to plan for the three things. You have to plan for it's not going to happen. You have to plan for it's going to happen with pretty severe restrictions, and you can plan for like maybe it just happens and everybody's okay. Right. Yeah. So you sort of, I mean, for Bob, like Bob is going to have to like let everybody know that he's got the trip going and he's not canceling it yet, but he might only be able to take 10 people and it might cancel altogether. And I think Bob should be like,
he's going to have to rank order those.
What?
And he's going to have to rank order those people, right?
Yeah.
Like, sorry, Kevin, that would
nobody wants to be on the B team. Like, hey, you can go, you can only go if we don't have guidelines. Like, you're an alternate. Nobody wants to be an alternate. That's a great way to
there's a point where you have to sacrifice some friends.
Yeah. That's not cool.
You could solve some problem.
That's a follow-up episode for you guys. Friendship in the Face of COVID on the River.
Yep. Yeah. Well, we have a whole COVID year of episodes coming ahead, so don't worry. Yep. So
easy ways to ditch.
This isn't what I wanted to hear, guys. Like, you guys are more pessimistic than I've been. Like, do you guys generally see stuff evolving towards? I get the feeling from this you guys think that we're still going to be able to do some trips, but there's going to be heavy restrictions in some way. Does that sum it up? Or you just saying,
Aaron,
you
want to have
no idea. Just like prepare. We are trying to prepare for that possibility. Yeah. We would love for things to open up and be better. We both would. I think there's certainly going to be some activities that are just going to be more impacted than other activities. There were some people, Zach, that were operating like 2 weekends ago. You know, big rentals, but big operations. So. This really is happening differently to different people, but if you're trying to like take the snapshot of the entire industry and like where that operation is going to end up, I think there's a ton of uncertainty for them. You know what? This might be a moment, like, just to sort of throw out there, we have like done some surveys of our people just to sort of see where they were and where they're going. And so we did a survey the first week when the lockdown really got going, so on March 20th, you know, and we had at that point like 40% who had said they'd of our respondents who'd said they'd suspended some of their operations, like 20. These are not exact numbers. I guess I should just use exact numbers. They're right here. 42%.
That's usually a good idea.
Yeah,
this is high level news we're doing here. We don't accept just
roughly half, which is to say like 32%.
We fact checked. This is a no spin zone. We fact check everything.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, then I'll get it right then. Yeah. 42% have suspended some operations. 39% are continuing to operate. 19% are fully shut down. Right now, that was. I'm trying to make sure I've got the other. I'm trying to spread out until I can find the new.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I would put myself in that fully shut down category right now. Like, I anticipate being able to run trips in June, but like, I'm fully shut down right now. We have trips that we're supposed to go this week that we're not running.
Yeah.
Well, so while Aaron's looking for that, Aaron number two is looking for that. I'd just say, like, I think Aaron framed it pretty well, which is, you know, we're the way to think of this, so like the questions you're asking are like, what does the future look like? And do we see the future optimistically, pessimistically, or realistically, or any of the above? And I'd say the best, the only possible answer, and the best possible answer is it could be that there is not a season. It could be that there is a season with restrictions, and it could be that there is a season without, or it could, and it could be that there's a season without restrictions. And I think everybody wants a season without restrictions, right? Yeah. Like everybody wants that. And that will be based on any number of things, not least the degree to which COVID remains present, scary, and growing. But like we are planning for, I think, in the respective organizations, what does it look like? So the season without restrictions is the easy one. What does it look like if that's the case? Well, it looks great. It's a sunny picture. What does it look like if there's a season with restrictions? And I think that's the most complicated version, if not the most dire version, which is like, how can we adjust our operations and how can people, whether commercial or private, change the way that they run trips in order to still be able to experience these things or to allow people to experience these things while still being, within the guidelines. And then the first in reverse order, the first possible outcome of no season is for everybody the worst outcome. And then the contingency plan becomes a little bit more dire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. That's just like, that's one piece that you have to keep in your back pocket, in your planning, whoever you are. Like, it just, like, there might not be a season, and in some places there's not going to be a season, and in some places there are. I found the rest of the stuff. Let me get through this so we can move on. Back on the 20th, 42% had said they suspended some operations. That's like down to 27%, and folks who said they had suspended all operations, it was 19% to the 20th, and now it's like up to 60%. One more factor. It's heavy, right? Yeah. Like when we ask this question of like, how, if the COVID crisis continues for an extended period of time, how long would your business survive? We asked that question 3 weeks ago, and it was 39% said they would last 3 months, right? Now that's up above almost 50%. 47%. So, I mean, even if there is a season, right, it's like, this is a hammer.
Yeah, I mean, for small, just to speak about from an operator perspective, you know, we aren't typically independently wealthy people. And so, you know, we're people who are, like for me, for example, like I was a guide and I got into outfitting. I don't have a huge bunch of money in the bank to bankroll a business if there's no trips. So, you know, we have to... You know, it's grim outlook without some sort of government support, as our business is even possible to stay alive through any number of scenarios. You know, and I think that's what Eric and I are probably working on all the time. I know I am. I'm sure Eric is, and other outfitters, is how do we survive one of those three scenarios? And it's certainly possible from my perspective, but it's challenging. It's thank God we're so tired of sponsoring for the show. Podcast. Yeah, that's what I was just saying. Like, man, that podcast advertising. Oh man, that's gonna keep the business alive.
So tired. Well, that's where best boats ever made.
Yeah.
Well, that's where the money is. You know, it's in podcast advertising.
Podcast advertising.
I know that's why me and Aaron number two are working so hard on pushing that to the different podcasts.
Good. Thank you for that. Matt.
That's how we save the industry. Yeah. All the podcasts, there's thousands of them, you know, and they're all just wealthy. They're all just rich.
So the other thing I want to ask is, I think a lot of people out there, whether they're outfitters or private boaters or guides, they're saying, how can I affect change here? How can I be part of a positive conversation in order to open the river earlier or responsibly? Or, I mean, I personally don't want to see us running rivers if it's not a responsible thing to do. So assuming that we are able to responsibly run trips, like how can the average person be involved? Should they go to meetings? Should they write letters to senators? Should they just sit at home and just cross their fingers? Is there something the average person can do to sort of help affect change here? Or are there things we shouldn't do? Like, should we just like, you know, any ideas, guys, how we can help, you know, help things so we can do trips this summer?
be awesome to each other. There's like there's, you know, this really interesting vibe that's going on right now, right? Where I had a friend, a colleague, who was running a trip just last weekend, just three folks, you know, floating down a river. They certainly were, you know, abiding by state regs, the state guidance. They certainly were obeying social distancing. It's just the three of them on a river. And like, they got yelled at, right? Like really yelled at by somebody because they just thought they were out of line. Mm-hmm. And so like, we have to start to shift that mentality, and you know, we'll get over this. We'll get over this. The top of this bell curve. I'm hoping, you know, in weeks, and as we start to step back out, like we have to create that space that says, you know, there are ways to get out and do these things in a way that's responsible, and we can demonstrate that. And so, like the more people we have sort of having that right kind of behavior, demonstrating that behavior. Expressing tolerance and even enthusiasm for finding time in the outdoors and you know, being on a river or a trail or whatever, I think it's going to help a lot. When it comes to like writing your congressman, Zach, like going through these three COVID bills has been like remarkable. I mean, you know, we had what for America Outdoors is a really good response to sort of our call to action work. We had close to 2,000 letters go out, which is huge for us. And it was like we were the Who's of Whoville on a dust speck on a flower in the middle of it. And yeah. It is hard to get traction, you know. Yeah. It is hard to get traction. So I think where we find those opportunities, like rather than go to Congress, like I say, go to your state. Or if you happen to have a connection with like the state rep, right, for somebody in Congress, like tell them your story, and like let them know your situation so they can sort of add it to their repertoire of ammo as they go to fight for all of us. That's maybe a way to go. And the other thing is like do the same thing that honestly we're doing. We're clearly not big enough to get a bailout for ourselves or anything like that, for outfitters, I mean. So we're trying to, you know, find other associations that are facing the same challenges. You know, seasonal operators were not well considered in this last go around. So to like make what's out there work better for people, I think that's something.
Yeah. So I think there are two different frames. Like there's the one frame, which is,
hold on, is this air number one or air number two talking?
This is just to be clear, this is air number one.
Okay.
Cool. If they're, that way, yeah.
So I wanted to make sure we knew yeah. who was talking.
I thought it would have been clear by now, but that's okay. This is air number one. I think there are two frames. Like so your question is like, what can we do? And on the one hand, I think if we're talking about boaters writ large, the answer is we can A, be flexible, and B, in the meantime, be creative, which is to say, you know, and I know outfitters are doing this already, like being creative about what would it look like if I had to abide by X, and trying to think around new ways of doing things, which is another thing that boaters are great at, like thinking outside of the box in really weird situations. Like, what are the ways that I could abide by this guideline while still being responsible and while still being able to experience and help other people experience, you know, X thing. So there's that frame. And then specifically to outfitting, there's kind of a different question, which is both that is part of the outfitter frame, which is like, how can we be creative? How can we find, you know, what can we do to operate within these guidelines, keep people safe, be responsible, be stewards of the resource, and also allow people to experience that resource. But also, how can we just stay solvent so that we can help people experience that resource going forward? And that goes back to the, you know, the best, worst, and middling case scenarios. And that's where it comes down more to political action and writing people. And like Aaron said, Aaron number two said, like reaching out to your congressional delegation, reaching out to your representatives on a state level, and encouraging them I could go into certain things I'd encourage people to do, but encouraging them to support seasonal businesses like ours, which are incredibly important, and in particular rural communities, and I guess speaking specifically to Idaho, certainly in rural communities, you know, it's the, like, this isn't just about, like, the conversation we're having right now isn't just about outfitters and guides or boaters in general. It's about all of those things plus all the places where they go. So, like, when we're talking about going to the Middle Fork or the Main or the Payette or whatever else, we're talking about people in Banks and McCall and Riggins and Orofino and Kamiai and Salmon and Chalice and Stanley, and like what that means for those communities. And all of those communities are incredibly based on outdoor recreation and tourism. And if those people, whether commercial boat or commercial outfitters or private boaters, aren't coming through their town, staying in hotels, buying gas, going to the cafe, and on, those communities stand to take a huge hit. And it's not just Idaho specific. That's true and all across the West, all across the country. So anyway, it really, really ups the ante on being aggressive, being creative, and getting together, because commercial and private, we're in this one together.
Yeah. It's that getting together piece. It's like, hey.
Is that Priscilla?
Hi. Hey, Priscilla.
I'm here.
She's back from doing Priscilla stuff. Are you still wearing your dry suit?
No. I unfortunately.
She's by the way, she's totally still wearing your dry suit.
I wish.
Can you smell? It was a quick no, Priscilla.
Yeah. Well, great summaries. Everyone that I've heard since I joined, I just wanted to kind of highlight and echo a little bit about what I've heard, because I just actually got off the call with Outdoor Alliance, and one of the things that we're seeing as an opportunity in all of this is to express how important economic recovery is after this in terms of providing support for recreation, not only from a management standpoint of like fully funding LWCF so that land managers can have the resources to manage our access points and our, you know, our campgrounds, those sorts of things, but also in the terms of recognizing the importance of guides and outfitters, seasonal operators, recreation, generally recreation industry folks contributing to small communities, as well as broadly a lot of our states, you know, Oregon, Idaho, California, we all have Washington. We have a large component of our economy that is that has benefited from outdoor recreation, travel, leisure activities, and a part of the overall economic recovery from the pandemic for these areas is going to be recreation centric. So I think individually and as organizations, we need to advocate for that and continue to rally together to say, hey, we're a really integral component of our economy, and there has to be industry specific resources and relief packages that will allow us to get through this.
Well, and yeah, so Priscilla, and I guess I'm going to direct this at Aaron number two as well. This is Aaron number one. it's a both and, right? Like, it's, so to your, I think to your point, like, it's, we do need, the industry does need at least the, it needs recognition. So, I mean, Aaron, so I know in Idaho, outdoor recreation tourism is the second largest industry. It's at $7.9 billion per year, as an industry. And that's second only to big ag. And what is it, Aaron, nationally? Three? Is that right?
I don't know.
I think it's number three. It's like number three or four nationally. And yet we have zero recognition so far as an industry. And that's in terms of relief programs, or, you know, we call them relief programs. Largely, these aren't, like, we're not getting bailed out, right? Like, no small businesses are getting bailed out. Like, the people who are getting bailed out are the cruise lines, which, thank God we have cruise lines. Like, who are these people who want to go on cruises? I'm sorry for any listeners that like cruises. Like, we wouldn't get along, I promise you. But the, like, I don't, like, why are we bailing out cruise lines? Like, we're not bailing out the, like,
my parents
anywhere
like
between
cruises, by
second.
The way.
Well, your parents are beautiful people, but they're wrong. And, but, like, we're bailing out these other industries. So there's one component, which is, like, the legislative and economic, like, legislative economic perspective or approach, which is like, we do need recognition as an industry, not because we are self-important as an industry, but because we are literally important as an industry for all these communities and all these states. And then there's the other component, which I think goes back to something Aaron number two was saying, which is like, we just need to figure out, in order to experience these places, like for the non-commercial side, like that's where we just need to be creative about how we do the thing at the time. Like, how can we socially distance and or take necessary precautions, if necessary, on the river when we want to go experience it?
Well, I think an important point on that one is, and I think it's part of why we are where we are, where in Washington and Oregon, the Forest Service has basically just shut down everything, right? If it's an approved site, it's closed. And in a lot of ways, like in Oregon, the sort of stay-at-home order, you know, stemmed from, it was like a stay-at-home request, and nobody listened. Yeah. Like, we got our hands slapped because we were behaving poorly.
Yeah.
In the same way that, like, a lot of the national parks got closed because people weren't behaving well for the circumstances that we had. And so as things start to open back up, I think one of the things that we as a whole community really have to be careful of is we have to behave. Like, we have to make good choices, and we have to do things where we're thinking about the bigger implications for society outside of just ourselves. And really try and align with sort of the intention of what people are saying. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's some systems out there that I think are unhelpful, but or some rules or whatever. But we can't just go nuts once it opens back up. We have to do things that are responsible and behave in ways that are responsible, or they're just going to shut it all back down again.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think that I've been thinking about a three-part plan while we've been talking about this, and here's my three-part plan. Number one is in the current place we're at, respect the closures and look responsible. Like, we want boaters and people that use national forests to be respectful now, so when decisions are made, we're looked upon favorably, and that we'll respect those decisions going forward. So I think to help us get going, we need to be respectful now. Two, there's going to be guidelines we're going to have to follow, and I think being a part of that conversation so those guidelines are reasonable and effective, I think is important. If the Forest Service just comes up with guidelines on their own, they might be kind of crazy. Whereas if we can work with them on developing things that are actually very good for what we're doing and effective, that's a good thing to do. And I think when this is over, we need to get the economy going. And so that is, we do need to get people visiting these small towns, or these small towns will collapse. So once we get going, we need to figure out how to go travel these places. But I also think about the gear manufacturers like NRS. If nobody boats, this is pretty brutal for NRS too, you know, or other gear manufacturers, and they could go away. And a lot of what we do depends on us having gear. Like, I can't go float down a river. Well, I guess I could with just a life jacket, but right. Like, we need to have manufacturers to make the stuff we play with. So just to reiterate.
And that wasn't a paid for ad.
That was not paid for. No,
that was not paid
for. But we'll do it.
Yeah, we'll do it. But to give a shout out to NRS, like, there are gear manufacturers out there, Chaco too, that are really stepping up. Like, NRS mm-hmm. is reverting some of their supply chain to provide PPE to like nationwide, not least in certain states. Chaco's doing the same thing. I mean, I think that's a model for not just outfitters or manufacturers, but for, you know, for everyone. I mean, Greg McFadden, an outfitter here in Idaho, he's been using, like, he started thinking about, like, hey, like, I've got these essentially mobile kitchens that I use for outfitting. Like, what if I were able to, like, use these to help people who otherwise don't have access to meals or whatever else? And so he's been doing that. I mean, there are ways that everybody can step up right now. That's great.
And I talked to Jeremiah Sotar this morning about our wonderful ad, and he's working on some sort of like some sort of inflatable thing that goes over people's heads that they can put oxygen into, which usually don't even want to put bags over your heads, but in this case you do. So I know even Sotar is working on that stuff.
No, I mean, sure, it sounds like a really good idea.
But
when in doubt, you want to put a fully enclosed polyurethane.
They have a hose of oxygen. So there's something he was saying about you can't go, like, COVID patients have to be separated by people. Well, if they can put bags over their heads and pump oxygen into them, they can put them in the same part. I don't know. Anyway.
What about their hands?
There's no bad ideas.
No, if your face is covered, your hands don't matter.
Is that true?
Yes. This comes out of your mouth and your nose. Do you think COVID's, you know, comes out of your belly button?
I don't know. I don't think, okay. You know what, Zach? I don't think any of us know. Does it come out of my sweat glands? Maybe.
Okay. Well, anyway, I just want to reiterate my 3-point plan again, because I think it's really smart.
There's
number
four
one, point. Respect the current closures so we can go, we're respected as a user group. Two, yeah. Help develop guidelines that are effective and reasonable so we can vote this summer in a respectful way and safe way. And then three, understand that we have to get back to doing things. We have to get this economy rolling again. And so when we can go, we do need to do these things, and we need to go buy equipment from manufacturers and support local businesses and small towns. Like, we can't just all stay in our houses all summer at the same time. So I think that's my 3-point yeah. plan. What do you guys think?
I like
you know
lot.
What? Like, yeah, it's you're spot on every one of them. So
thank you.
And if there's like a silver lining in all of this, right? It's sort of to your point three, really to every, like, sort of the respect piece is just always there, but here we all are in our houses, like, trying to get by and, you know, homeschooling or whatever else, taking care of sick people. But we are really connected right now as a species. And that is a really interesting thing for me to look at. And there is a ton of compassion out there. And it's, you know, it's moving for me. And I see that as sort of, we get to the other end of this. Yeah, we figure out how to work together and solve the problems. We've been doing good so far.
Yeah.
Yep. Amen, brother.
I think that's awesome. Maybe a good place to end this conversation and move over to gear of the week.
Oh, shoot, I don't have mine ready. I think Aaron number one should go first.
Ooh, gear of the week. I'd say my gear of the week right now is my cell phone signal booster, because I'm relying on that for, you know, my hotspot and all the communications and stuff like that. So gear of the week is, it's called the Wii Boost, maybe. I don't know. It's a,
it's a
not
a
great
you put
name.
On your phone yeah. that makes your signal better.
Yeah. So there's like an antenna, you know, and, if you're like most of us, you put it on the top of your trailer and then there's like a little cradle for your phone. And it boosts your data signal, so that you can.
Well, but they make
work
they make
when
them
you're, when you're out around.
They make them for your truck, right? So you get ones you can wire into your truck, and you put your phone in the cradle. And then if you're out somewhere and you normally would have like a 1 bar, you can end up with like a 3 or 4 bar.
Man, I had no idea.
Yeah, that's what this is for. I'm using it in my trailer because I figure it's pretty applicable. But yeah, so I'm like, if I didn't have this on right now, I'd be at 1 bar. I'm at 5 bars.
I'm getting one. I didn't even know that existed. Thank you.
Yeah.
If you spend a lot of time driving around remote country, it seems like a pretty stinking cool.
Which Zach does.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. I constantly can't check flows when I'm in random places. So this will be helpful. my gear of the week is peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, man. Now that I have to make my own lunch every day, I'm highly dependent on peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and they're amazing.
You'll be a cook for the rest of your life. That's a great start.
I mean, I'm a cook. I just, you know, I work a lot. So during the day, I don't want to go make food. I wake up in the morning, I don't want to make myself lunch. And now that I am, I just throw bread and peanut butter and jelly in a bag, and I'm good for the day. I love it.
Sweet. Would we all pick gear of the week? Is that how this works?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're up.
Yep.
My gear of the week, I think, is like... I can't. Trek makes it, but it's this small bike for 6-year-olds. And like we as a family, my 6-year-old daughter and my 9-year-old son, like that's one thing you can do, bike around. And she's finally figured out how to ride that. She's never had training wheels, and she rotated off her kick bike. And it's so fun to like bike with these kids. And they love it. So it's like one way you can get out and respect social distances and still have the wind in your face. So that little Trek bike, man, loving it.
Cool.
Awesome. Wait, can I ask a clarifying question about the Trek bike? Is that like is it like a tricycle?
No, it's a regular bicycle.
So it doesn't.
Trek is
it
a company that makes bikes.
Right. Yeah, right. Does it diminish? Does it diminish the learning curve? What was I'm not trying to be a jerk. I was just wondering, like, what differentiates this bike from the others except for Trek?
It's the geometry, dude. The geometry makes it real easy for a kid to ride. Truly, it's
physics
better than other bikes of the same size out there. And we should get some money from Trek, right, for that?
Yeah, exactly. Where's Trek at as an advertiser?
Yeah. So that's part of it. And also, like, with the kick bikes, like, kids don't have to use training wheels at all anymore to ride bikes. It's so cool.
It's amazing. My kids went from straight from like the push bikes to pedal bikes, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. Cool. My gear of the week. Sometimes our gear of the week is things we like, and sometimes gear of the week is things we don't understand. So I want to preface this with the very first pair of shoes I ever bought with my own money were Chacos. Like, I have been passionate about Chacos for as long as there's, like, forever, decades. And I love Chacos. And now I'm getting emails from Chaco, like, all the time, where they're showing these basically, like, what appear to be rip-off Birkenstocks. It's like a Chaco, but sort of Chaco looks stocks. Like, it's basically a Birkenstock turned into a Chaco. And it just feels ridiculous. I don't understand why they're doing this. They were like the river guide sandal, like a high performance sandal for people who do rad stuff. And this feels like a college professor wearing socks with shorts, kind of a deal. And I don't get it. It feels,
that's pretty cool. I wear socks with shorts all the time.
Yeah. I also, Aaron number two, I also wear socks with shorts all the time. So
Aaron number one's done it for years, and we've tried to talk him out of it for a lot of them.
it's one of the many things that sets us apart from the rest, Aaron.
You got to fly your freak flag, right?
That's right.
So, although I will say, it seems like socks with shorts are coming back. It's becoming a thing. So, yeah, that's my gear of the week. I don't understand the new Chacos. It makes no sense to me. Priscilla, you got anything?
Yeah, I got something. It's not really gear, but say my gear of the week or gear of last week was a Netflix show, Tiger King.
helped
definitely make it through a week of this and not really being able to do much. So,
wait, Aaron number two, you haven't heard of this show yet?
I've heard all about it, but okay. I don't really.
So I heard about it. So Aaron number one heard about it. That's me, by the way. I heard about it yesterday, and I was confused because I was on this call with a bunch of guides, and everybody was talking about Tiger King. Somebody was dressed up like a tiger, and I didn't understand. I just thought it was a cool outfit, you know. It's like, Aaron, wow, that guy really went above and beyond in the outfit. This is just a guide call, but yeah, the Tiger King thing. I haven't seen it yet, but I hear it's.
I mean, so here's the thing about this is that we're going to run out of topics here pretty soon because there's no boating. And so,
so we're going to talk about the Tiger King.
We probably need to turn this into a Tiger King podcast here. So Aaron, why don't you get caught up here with us?
And then, yeah, we'll do.
And then we'll do another episode about Tiger King.
Aaron, well, one and Aaron, you can have a virtual.
Yeah, can you party watch something? I don't have a Netflix account because I piggyback off of Aaron number two's.
Yeah, totally. Watch my screen, watch the other screen.
Just share your screen using Zoom, and then we'll watch Tiger King that way. It'll fit into the rest of the day.
That would be fun, actually. We probably have work to do, though.
Well, Aaron 1 and Aaron 2, thank you guys for joining us and having this conversation. We really appreciate you taking the time. And we have, you know, as outfitters, I know I certainly appreciate all the work you guys are doing. We might be back doing another podcast next week. We're around our houses.
Well, now that we have a sponsor, we kind of have to.
Oh, that's right. And if we have more sponsors, we'll probably do even more.
Yeah,
so,
like Trek.
Yeah, like Trek.
Trek, awesome. It's so fun. Your kids are going to love it. They go straight from the push bike, whatever that is, to the what is it called, the flip bike. It's so fun. It's so, if you're looking for a great time with your family during the edge of COVID, Trek. Wow, what a product.
Aaron, you're hired.
Aaron number one is going to do all of our ads.
Yep.
Awesome, guys. Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, guys.
Conversation.
And it's over. And we always end in an awkward fashion. So you guys did a great job with that. I didn't even tell you that it ended in an awkward fashion. You just did it on your own.
Thank you.
That was amazing.
Yeah.
Is it over? Is it over now?
Yeah.
I'm on Chattahoochee on Rio Grande, the Allegheny and the Cumberland.